So I'm going to preach on James 1 because you know what? I think this is a passage that meant a lot to me and has been growing me. And that's probably one of the best things I can preach on. So we're going to talk about a new joy. You know, and Jesus really is, when he says, I'm making all things new in Revelation 21, from the moment of when Christ died on the cross and rose from the grave, he has been making all things new. We talked about new life on Easter. We talked about a new covenant the week after. We talked about new power last week. We're talking about a new joy, but this is a different kind of joy. You know, a lot of times when we think about this idea of joy, we think about the joy of like, I mean, my first thought is when the Packers beat the Bears. That's like my kind of greatest joy, especially like all you Bears fans. I'm sorry, I'm just going to go after it right now. The Aaron Rodgers to Randall Cobb touchdown pass on fourth down with 43 seconds left for the Packers to go to the playoffs. 3 years ago. That was one of the greatest moments of all times. Okay, I'm just going to tell you this right now. I was sitting in the house. It was a night game. My kids were in bed. I was texting my other Packer friends, and there was 43 seconds left. We were going to lose the game, and then magic happened. And I lost it. I woke up all of my children. My wife was shaking her like that. You know, that was joy. I was like throwing things around. But that's not this kind of joy. That's a lame joy that ends 30 seconds later. You know, when we think about joy, that's the kind of thing, you know, Christmas morning, when we get a raise at work, when, you know, when the thing, all the things fall into place, or when we come out of trials and now it's all good. That's the kind of joy we want, but that's really not it. Because that's not a sustaining joy. The joy that James talks about here is a joy that's found in hardship. But a joy that makes us complete. James tells us that we should find our joy in suffering because it brings us to completion. We should find joy in suffering because it brings us to completion. But how do we find that joy? Well, we find joy in several different ways that James shows us right here. And as you open up to James 1, we're going to start in verse 2. And he says, count it all joy, my brothers, when you meet trials of various kinds. For you know that the testing of your faith produces steadfastness. And let the steadfastness have its full effect, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. So the first thing that we see here in James is that we can find joy in suffering when we let it have its full effect. We can find joy in suffering when we let it have its full effect. Now, you know, in our day and age, I don't know if you know this, but it doesn't take long to find out. We don't stay in one place too long anymore. You know, we're always moving around. You know, I remember one point in time I was working at a job. I've kind of talked about this before, different times. It was third shift, and it was during my college years. And I was talking to this one lady, and she'd worked here for 25 years. And like, I went home and I told my dad, I was like, Dad, this lady's been here for 25 years. And he's like, Jess, that used to be normal. But we don't do that anymore. We change jobs. You know, things get hard and we change jobs, or life gets hard and we move, or, you know, something new comes, so we go after that or we go after that. And, you know, we typically, when suffering and trials come, we do our best to get out from it. But James is telling us, no. We need to find joy in our suffering when we let it have its full effect on us. And we start to now count it all joy. That's a good thing, right? I like passages that start like that. Like, count it all joy. Yes, I like that part. Let's count this joy. Well, what are we going to count joy? Count it all joy, my brothers, when you meet trials of various kinds. What? Like, count it all joy when I make hardship, when I come under. How? Why? You know, and James is getting the church, you know, he's getting the church ready because he's trying to, you know, trials aren't uncommon. Trials are a normal thing in everyday life, and he's trying to remind them, count it all joy. Now, a couple things, you know, that you need to understand. A lot of times when people read this passage and you read that phrase, all joy, okay, we think that he's talking about that's the only thing that we can feel. That when hardship and trials come, that's the only thing that we can feel. And if we feel anything else other than joy, we're not doing this right. So it's very discouraging. But that term all joy, it doesn't mean that that's the only thing. When he says count it all, it's a fullness of joy. That the joy that you feel is real, expressive, and full. It's not fake. But that doesn't mean that's not the only thing. You know, James isn't telling us here that that's the only thing. Joy is one of the many things that we need to experience when we go through trials and tribulation. And a lot of times when we go into a trial, the only thing we do is gripe or complain, or we feel bad about ourselves, or we are sad, or we're angry. And to be honest, some of those things we need to. But we need to learn how to bring joy as well. How to bring joy into our trials. He says, count it all joy, my brothers, when you meet trials of various kinds. But why? Why would we count it joy? Well, he says, look at verse 3. For you know that the testing of your faith produces steadfastness. The testing of your faith. Okay, he's talking about the belief that we put in Jesus Christ. You see, you know, God created the world all the way back in Genesis. When God created a perfect world, and he put Adam and Eve in that perfect world, and they were, you know, they had a perfect relationship with God. They were able to commune with God and walk with God and be and live in God's presence to perfection right up until Genesis 3, when we decided to spit in the face of God. And they decided they wanted to give up God's presence for being like God. You know, Satan came along and tapped Eve on the shoulder and said, listen, if you want to be God, just eat the fruit. It's going to give you the knowledge. You know, and from that moment on, we have lived in separation from God. And we can no longer be in the presence of God. And from that moment, God has been revealing his plan of redemption all throughout the Bible. How do we get back into the presence of God? And it accumulates in the person and death and resurrection of Jesus. When Jesus came and died on the cross and took our place. And when we put our belief in Jesus, that Jesus died for us. He took my place so that I can know God perfectly, where God no longer sees my life, but sees the perfect life of Jesus. And I believe that Jesus died in my place on the cross so that I can have a hope of eternity and a hope of God's presence. Okay, that's the faith that he's talking about. The faith that we put in Jesus. Now, where it's not a faith in my works, where it's not a faith in the works of people around me, but it's a faith in Jesus. I believe in the promise that he has given us. But you see, that faith isn't any good until it's tested. That faith isn't any good until it's tested. He says, for you know that the testing of your faith produces steadfastness. Now, I have a couple friends who, they do these ultra marathons. You know what I'm talking about? Like these really long races. I talk about this one guy all the time. Right, Josh? There you go. I talked to Sam on the phone today, or yesterday. We talked about these ultra marathons. But you have these guys who run these ultra marathons. And, you know, I know a lot of people when it comes to working out and getting in shape and running and things. They talk a good game, you know? And like, I could do this, and I talk a good game, and I don't really have a good game. But you hear these people where, you know, I could run this, I do, you know, I can go this far, this fast, or whatever. You know, you start to get into CrossFit. If you hang out with CrossFit people, you know they do CrossFit because they talk about CrossFit. But they talk a good game, but it's not until you really see them under that weight, where you see them under that weight, where you see them run those long distances, where you see them go through the 10-mile and the 20-mile and the 25-mile, and then you see the work that they go through to recover and then go do it again. And when you start to actually see the work and the difficulty that they have to go through to get to that point, you're like, oh, man, that person's legit. They really are what they say they are. Okay. The same is true with our faith in Jesus. We can claim all that we want, that we believe in what Jesus has called us to, that we have a faith in Jesus, but it's not until it's tested. It's not until God allows us to go through these trials. It's all right, God, I'm going to lean on that faith in this time. God, I know that you are allowing me to go through this season to test my faith. You're allowing me to go through this season to build steadfastness. That faith is just like the muscle. It's a growing thing that for us to really understand how much weight that faith in Christ can really hold, it has to be tested. And so when he says, count it all joy, my brothers, when you meet trials of various kinds, why would we count it joy? Because we know what's coming. God is building our faith. God is deepening our faith so we can know God better, so we can understand how to live this life better. And when he says this idea, you know, count it all joy, my brothers, when you meet trials of various kinds, for you know that the testing of your faith produces steadfastness, and let that steadfastness have its full effect. Let the steadfastness have its full effect, meaning continue to work out in you and me. That means allowing yourself to stay under the weight. You know, a lot of times we hit these moments of trials and tribulation, and all we want to do is get out of it. We just want to leave. I was talking about running. I hate running. I utterly despise running, John. Okay, I really do. And the moment I put my headphones on and I start running, all I want to do is finish. I want to be done. That's it. I'm done. I hate this. You know, but you have to remain under for it to have its full effect. That word, let it be steadfast. It's the picture of somebody bearing heavy burdens for a long way. It's the idea of, you know, if you've ever seen the movie Unbreakable, you know, the book came out, Unbreakable. What's the guy's name? Kelly, did you read this? Come on, Kelly, you had to read this, right?
I'm sorry, no, I don't.
Kelly, no. Has it been in the stack of books? Well, I don't know. It's a guy from World War II, but if you've seen the movie, you know, there's that one scene where they're trying to break him, and he's just sitting there holding up that crossbeam for hours, or where he is remaining. That's the picture that this word brings up, that you remain under the pressure for a long time. Why? So it produces a steadfastness in you. It produces somebody who can bear the weight, who can lift the load, who is no longer shaken back and forth to and fro, but can stay the steady course. And yet we all want to be that person. We don't want to be people who are bumped around by every trial in life. We want to be people who can continue to stay steady, continue to stay faithful, but that requires us staying under the trial, allowing it to produce steadfastness, having its full effect. And he finishes off the section, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking nothing. Now that completeness comes to its full effect in heaven. When Jesus comes back, when we meet God in heaven, that's when we will be made perfect. And until that time, we are growing in that direction. If you are a follower of Jesus, God has called you to live by the power of the Spirit and to continue to grow into your person of Christ, your ability to show off God's glory, to show His faithfulness in your life. But that requires us to be steadfast. And you see, you know, it's when you see that, you know what, I'm in this trial, and God is using this trial to make me steadfast, to make me strong in faith, to allow me to understand how to live through this life. And the next time around, I'll be able to take more and more and more. And you understand that God is making you stronger, making you more aware of His presence in your life. That's where the joy comes from. All right, Lord, I get it. I get it. You know, I like to watch like cooking shows. And I really like the cooking shows. Ashley and I, we'll watch them together. But I like the cooking shows where it's the people who don't really know how to cook, because I can like commiserate with them a lot better. And we watched this one cooking show called Nailed It. It's on Netflix. And Jerry's got it. And, you know, it's a bunch of people who don't really know what they're doing. And, you know, you go in there, or you go and you watch that show, and there are moments where you just cringe, where it kind of comes to the end of a section, and you just realize that person's not going to get anything on their plate. And your, like, heart just kind of breaks for them. You're like, ah! Well, one of those things that happens time and time again
is this, when they're making cakes, okay, and they have to make these big cakes, you know, there's real big elaborate cakes, and they have to make a deep cake, and so they go get a big deep cake pan, and they make the batter all up, and you're like rooting them on, and you have your favorite, and Ashley has her favorite, and we're kind of figuring out who's going to win, and you're watching them go, and then they take a cake pan that's a little bit too big, you're like, oh, no, I wouldn't do that one, I would do more smaller ones, but they do that one anyway, so you just let it go, breathe. And then they put it into the oven, and, you know, they're waiting, and they're running out of time, and they know that they have to take that cake out and let it cool so they can put the frosting on and decorate it. And they're trying to figure out if they should leave it in longer or if they should take it out now. And they're getting ready, and you see them, they're about to take it out, and you're like, no, don't do it, it's not ready yet. But they do it anyways. Then your heart starts to break. Oh, that's not going to work. And they take it out, and they take that cake pan, and then it goes to slow-mo. Like somehow, I don't know how Netflix always catches it in real time. They don't really catch it in real time, it's a replay. But they, you know, they shake it out, and the cake comes out, and it plops on the table. And for like 2 seconds, it looks good. You're like, oh, I made it. And then it crumbles and just goes out and falls apart. And your heart just pricks for that person. You should have left the cake in there a little bit longer. Why? Because that heat in the oven, you know, builds the stability in that cake to hold it together. And if you take it out too early, it just doesn't work. But the same is true with trials with us. If we step out of the trial, if we leave the trial that God has given us too early, if we just look for the ending and don't look for what God is doing in us, it won't produce the steadfastness. And if we're going to be able to hold together, it's going to be because God is working through us, not in blessing, but in trial. And that should bring in us a deep joy. And, you know, that doesn't mean we don't pray for relief. You know, Jesus did. He prayed and said, Lord, remove this cup. If there's any way, remove this cup. But it doesn't mean we need to remain under it. And Lord, but if you don't have this, if you aren't going to remove this, Lord, give me, sustain me. You know, that leads us to the next thing that Paul teaches, that we should ask for wisdom more than reprieve. We should ask for wisdom. It doesn't mean that we don't. We see Jesus, Lord, if it's your will, remove this cup from me. But if not, God, give me strength. Look at what he says. He says in verse 5, if any of you lack wisdom, let him ask God, who gives generously without reproach, and it will be given him. If any of you lack wisdom, you know, a lot of times we suffer in trials and we just ask to be removed. Lord, I don't want to be under this trial anymore. Take me out. Where's the quickest exit? And again, it's not bad to pray for, but that shouldn't be the only thing we pray for. If all we're ever looking for is the exit, and if all we're ever looking for is how to get out of there, we're never going to learn what God is trying to teach us. But it said here, you know, kind of James switches, and at first it's like, all right, he's just kind of switching thoughts. Okay, he's going from trials and tribulation and counting it joy, my brothers, when you face trials of many kinds. Now and then he's jumping down this idea of now he's talking about wisdom. But really these two things go together. This help us in our trials. What do? We pray for wisdom. And, you know, if any of you lack wisdom. Okay, well, a lot of us, like, we read that first section and we kind of like, oh, that's not talking about, I don't lack wisdom. They're talking about that guy over there. No. We all lack wisdom. What he's talking about is that moment where you are in a trial, where you're looking around and you're like, I don't know what's up from down. I don't know what's left or right. I don't know my way out. If it happens in the parenting all the time. Like, there are so many times when Allie runs in the house and says something where I'm just like, Okay. That's the lack of wisdom. We don't have all of the wisdom that we need to get through this life. We don't have all of the wisdom that we need to be able to get through these trials, to understand how to get through these trials, to understand how to become steadfast. And so what he says If any of you lack wisdom, we should all be like, that's us. He's talking to us. We lack wisdom. We don't understand everything we need to know. And so in our humility, we say, yeah, it's us. He says, if any of you lack wisdom, let him ask God. You know, a lot of times, if we get the first thing wrong, we get the second thing wrong. If we think, oh, I got this. I have enough wisdom to get through this. I know how to do this. Then I just start working really hard to get through this. And we don't ask God. I got this. I know. You know, I have Bible training. Do you know this? I have Bible training. I can get through this. I understand this trial enough. I know John talks about it here, and Peter talks about it here, and Paul talks about it here. I've been through this enough where I can figure this out. I've had kids long enough. I know how to walk through this with my kids. I've been married almost 10 years. Okay, that's a good thing. Yes. I got this covered. And you know, a lot of times we don't really have that argument with ourselves, but we really do think that way. We think we have enough wisdom to cover. We think we know what we're doing. We've checked enough boxes where we could just get through this. And then what happens after that? We don't ask God because we think we have it. And so it starts with understanding, no, I need God. If any of you lack wisdom, that's me. So what do? I ask God. I ask God. Lord, help me understand how to get through this trial. Lord, I don't know up from down. I need you to give me wisdom. Jesus didn't encourage his readers to just pray for relief, but instead he asked to pray for wisdom. This is that God gives generously. Okay, it's not like a simple little like, oh yeah, God will answer your prayer. Oh yeah, yeah, God's got that. No, he gives generously. That's like above and beyond what we ask for. You want to understand how to get through the current trial you're in. Listen, God is calling you to be steadfast. God is calling you to remain under and learn and deepen your faith so that you can count it joy because you've seen your works. But how do you do that? You go before God and ask for wisdom. Lord, I need you. I need you to help me understand how to get through this. I don't know up from down. And we need to be regularly asking God how to handle the easiest and the hardest stuff in our life. This is God gives generously. And so instead of always just trying to find our way out of this trial, and again, you know, it is not wrong to pray for God to remove something from you, but that can't be the only thing that we do. If we're really going to learn how to have a fullness of joy in that, we also have to learn how to grow in that trial. And we do that by asking, Lord, show me the way. Lord, what are you trying to teach me? Being humble. Because you know what happens in the trials a lot of times? And maybe it's just me. If it's just me, then you can take it as such. But when I suffer trials, you know, my first reaction is, it's their fault. They did it. This is happening to me. It's not a humble submission looking for growth. It's a blaming every other situation and every other person around me. Well, it's because of this, or it's because of that, or if this would just change, or if that would just happen, or I don't grow from that. That's not steadfastness. But when we understand that we need godly wisdom, so we understand that it only comes from praying and asking us, saying, I don't have it, Lord. I need you. It's a switching from thinking, Lord, it's their fault, it's their fault, it's that thing's fault, to it's probably my fault. Or at least God's trying to teach me something through this. And it starts taking the pressure off of other people and other circumstances around you, and it starts putting it a little bit of pressure on your own heart and soul. Lord, what do I need to grow from this? How do I know what I need to change? Lord, I need wisdom to understand how to disciple my child through this. Lord, I need to know how to handle the situation at work. God, I don't have this. That's a perfect place for us to be before God. Lord, I need you. So sometimes we need to ask less for reprieve and more for wisdom, for to find joy in our suffering. And the last thing that James brings up is that we have to be all in on our requests. We have to be all in on our requests. Look what he says in verse 6. He says, but let him ask in faith. Let him ask in faith with no doubting. For the one who doubts is like a wave of the sea that is driven and tossed by the wind. For the person must not suppose that he will receive anything from the Lord. He is a double-minded man, unstable in all of his ways. That's a pretty harsh section following right after the generous God section. And that's kind of difficult. We're like, well, didn't he just say that God gives generously, but now he's saying he doesn't give at all? How do you understand this? Well, see, if you've ever read James, James is a fun book, okay? James is kind of like, I like James because like totally speaks to my soul, but it's like rapid fire ADHD. He just like goes boom, 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 boom all over the place. Doesn't really have one central theme. And just and for those of us who like have like 30 seconds and then we're on to the next thing, James is the perfect book. I'm just going to tell you that right now. And a lot of times people have a hard time understanding what the central topic of James really is. But I think it's this double-minded man that he's really writing to. I think when you put all of the different issues that James deals with throughout this book, it's this double-minded person that he's talking about. And when he says that there's no doubting, depending on where your doubt comes from, there's a understanding where your doubt comes from, what you do with your doubt changes a lot of things. Because I'm going to tell you right now, every Christian doubts. Every person doubts. This isn't saying that you will never doubt, but what you do with that doubt. And a double-minded, that person he's talking about, this double-minded person is a person that tries to have his one foot in the world and his one foot in heaven, in the heavenly kingdom, in God's kingdom. And it's a double-minded person is somebody who's like, I'm going to try to have the best of both worlds. I don't want to commit to this because I don't like hell, but I don't want to commit to this because I don't want the scorn. And they try to take a little bit from here, and they try to take a little bit from here, and their doubting comes from a lack of conviction and commitment to God himself. You see, the doubt that he's talking about here in James, the doubt that's brought up, is like, well, do I really want to commit to this because it's hard? Because it's difficult? Do I really want to commit to this because that looks good? And he's talking about this double-minded man that is unstable in all of his ways. That's the exact opposite of what James is talking about happens when we stay in trials in our faith. That he talks about, you know, the steadfastness is what we're becoming. This person is the exact opposite. They're just jumping ship from ship to ship to ship, just whatever's easiest. And you see, a lot of times as Christians, we do have doubts. We struggle with things. You know, there are times when God does bring trials. It's difficult. And if anybody tells you differently, it's not true. Just come hang out my house for like an hour. You'll see it happen in my own life. But where do we go in that doubt? Where do you go in that doubt? That's where the real question is. If you get to that place and you hit that doubt and you're just kind of looking around, all right, do I go to the wisdom of the world? Do I go to the things of the world to meet my needs, help me out, or do I go to God with that doubt? Now that's where the double-minded man comes in. And when we come up with that doubt, no, God, I'm going to you. God, I'm going to you. I don't understand how to get through this, but I am going to you. He says, but let him ask in faith with no doubt. Meaning, I don't understand how this is going to work out. God, I don't understand what you are doing. Lord, I am struggling, but I know you are the only answer. And I don't completely understand everything. But I do know you came down and died and took my place. So we have to be all in on our requests. Because we don't want to be that guy who's tossed around. The picture that he draws here is for the one who doubts is like a wave. You ever been on a boat in a storm? It's kind of scary. I've never been on a big storm or a big lake, but we have a family cabin up in Eagle River, and we have this little fishing boat that I was out with my grandpa one time, and a storm kind of came in, and it literally was like waves that are like this. But I was like, oh, I got scared. But he's talking about these big storms, and you look around, these waves, they have no stability in and of their own. They're just tossed around. You know, wherever the wind is blowing and the storm is going, they're just pushed around. And that's a good picture, because if we are not stable, okay, any trial or tribulation that this life brings, let me tell you, there's going to be a lot. You're just going to be blown and pushed and tossed. But we don't want to be that. We want to be steadfast. And that comes through remaining in trials, asking God for wisdom so that we find joy in our trials, knowing that he's building a steadfastness in it. So when the wind and waves come, we're not pushed to and fro. But we know, no, God, I don't know how I'm going to get through this. God, I don't completely understand everything, but I understand you. And so we have to go, we have to ask for God's wisdom and have faith that he is going to answer. And you know, a lot of times, faith is a funny thing. A lot of times we think this, you know, like, well, I prayed, God, and I asked you for wisdom on how to get through, and I'm still waiting here, and nothing's happened. I've had that happen to me sometimes. I don't know if you, but, and it's like, God, what's going on? You haven't answered my prayer request yet. I've asked for this, but all we've done is waited. Part of asking in faith and being all in on our request is saying, Lord, I need help to get through these situations. I need wisdom. I need you to give me an understanding of what I need to grow on and what I need to do. I need you to do this. And then part of being a faithful Christian is going to the places where God offers godly wisdom. All right, Lord, I believe you're the only thing, but I'm not going to, but I believe you're the only thing that can get me through this trial. But instead of getting up in the morning to read my Bible and go and study, I'm actually going to stay up late and watch Netflix so I can just shut out my problems. That's not being all in. All right, God, I have this, but I'm going to go do my own thing. Well, that means we go through trial and tribulation and we just try to figure it out all on our own. God, I need you. I need you. We don't ever go to the other godly Christians around us for wisdom and discernment. We just keep it in our own little house. Or we don't go and find people to mentor us or disciple us. And you know, part of being a faithful Christian and being all in is saying, Lord, I need your wisdom. I need what you have for me. All right, where do you show it to me? In your word, in your people. You know, one of the greatest blessings for me, you know, we have five kids. I have a lot of kids. And they're difficult. Do you know that? Like, any parent's like, yes, I do know. That's why we celebrate moms, because kids are difficult. Not usually, but you're not difficult. But, you know, and there are moments in our parenting, lots of times, where I'm like, Lord, I have absolutely no idea how to handle the situation. I don't know what to do. And as they're getting older, it's happening more and more frequently. But I've been extremely blessed. I was a student pastor for a long time, for like 12 years. And, you know, I've been given a front row seat to a lot of parenting. You know, I get to see a lot of parents do a lot of parenting, and you know, just kind of naturally throughout, you know, I did not set this up. This is God's providence in our family's life, but I have been able to get really close to several families who have done a very good job at parenting. Who I have now seen their kids grow up. I had them in student ministry. They're now in college. I've seen, and more, I pick up the phone and call them. I have no idea what to do in this situation. I'm so thankful that God has given us that door, but we need to understand that's part of godly wisdom. And when we ask and we're all in, it's not just waiting for something miraculous to happen. It's then looking up and thinking, okay, God, what have you provided for me to go learn from you? The people around me, your word, you know, people who've gone before me and say, all right, God, I'm going to go find it from that. I'm not going to turn on Netflix. I'm not going to go just drown my sorrows out this way. I'm going to pray. I'm going to ask, and I'm going to go look for it because I know you're going to provide it. Count it all joy, my brothers and sisters, when you meet trials of various kinds. For you know that the testing of your faith produces steadfastness. That's what we want to be. We want to be a steadfast person. We want to be a person that people can count on. We want to be a person that points people to Jesus regularly at all times. We want to be a person that's not tossed around by the waves. But that takes finding joy in trials. That takes finding joy in trials. That doesn't mean that's the only thing you feel, but that does mean we work hard at finding what God is doing and being thankful for it. And I know a lot of you are coming from a lot of different trials. A lot of you, you know, if you're a part of this church, church planting's not easy. And I know a lot of different trials and tribulations that are going on because of this. But a lot of you are involved in other ministries or are married or your jobs or whatever the case may be. And a lot of times it's really hard to find joy in that trial. But when we start to understand, but I know God is strengthening me. I know God is making me steadfast, completing everything wrong in me, making me more like God, slowly and surely up until he comes back again. And this trial will just give me a greater appreciation for the work that God is doing in me. All right. Lord, give me wisdom. Help me understand how to get through this. Help me go find it, Lord. That's the church I want to be a part of. That's the people who I want to do life with. And that's what I believe God's called this church to be a part of. Not a bunch of people who run, but a bunch of people who say, no, God's faithful. He's going to do a work in me. Amen?
Amen.
The band's going to come back up. We're going to sing a couple more songs. And I just want to encourage you, even as we're singing these last songs, again, I know a lot of you are going through a lot of different things. And, you know, a time of worship is a great time to go before God and say, God, I'm helpless. And that's really what worship is. It is saying, God, you are greater than me. This is not for me, but this is for you. And even as you're singing these songs, a lot of times you can even put your own story into these songs. Lord, I know this, but I know this is true about you. This is a struggle in my life, but this is true about you. And even make these songs a prayer to the Lord that he would be what he deserves. And, you know, I would even encourage you even just to do some time reflecting and looking in the mirror. You know, he goes on in James and talks about a guy looking into a mirror. And just do that and just see, Lord, am I that steadfast person? Or am I that person that's tossed all around? And just every time a trial comes up, I just leave. I just get out from under it. And even as we're singing these last couple songs, just say, Lord, allow me to be steadfast. Give me the wisdom that I need. And then I would encourage you, even as you go home today, just think about, okay, where can I go find that wisdom? Where's God provided that in my life for me to get through that? And God, we come before you. Lord, we thank you for the book of James. God, we thank you for the encouragement that it brings. And God, I just ask, you know, even right now, Lord, that you would help us remain steadfast. God, that we would count it all joy because we understand the work that you are doing in us. God, that you are producing a people who are steadfast, God, who are believing in the things that you have promised. And God, I just pray, I know, Lord, a lot of different situations that are going on. And there's a lot I don't know. God, in my own life and the people around us that are very difficult and God are hard and God, the trials that you've allowed in our life. And Lord, I pray that you would give peace over those. God, I pray that you would bring reprieve and God, that you would bring whatever is needed. But God, I also pray that you would bring wisdom and discernment And God, that you would help us remain steadfast so that we would be strong, faithful people because you are working in our trials. And God, even as we go home, Lord, let us, even as we're driving in our car, just experience a little bit of that joy that can blossom into a fullness of joy. That we understand when we go to work on Monday, that trial is still going to be there. But we know that it's doing its work in our life. And God, I pray that you would just surround this church with wise people. Lord, people going after the wisdom of God. And people understand they need godly wisdom. And God, that we would be a church that doesn't find the answers in worldly wisdom, but we go after the things that you have provided. And God, I pray that this faith, Lord, that you are making steadfast, that's growing in us, that you would produce a church that is on fire for the Lord and proclaims the gospel because we know you have changed us. Let us be steadfast, Lord.